This is JimPinto.com e-news number 269, the 15th of July, 2009. This e-news is read by JimPinto's text-to-speech robot Jimbo, or Jimbot, if you prefer. As usual, there are 5 items, and 3 feedbacks in this issue of e-news. Item 1. Wolf hides while Invensys slides. Invensys CEO Wolf Henriksen seems gullible, at best. He backed Paulette Eberhardt for 2 years in the direction of making Invensys a pure software play, allowing her to move headquarters to Dallas, purely for her own convenience. Foxborough's coder competence was gutted, and replaced with Paulette's ex-CDS buddies. The software and services-based strategy developed by Eberhardt, and enthusiastically endorsed by Wolf, was in fact leading up a blind alley. Paulette was fired, with not a word of explanation. Strike number 1. Now Wolf has apparently been persuaded by Sidepta to adopt a radical strategy change for the new entity created by the fusion of IPS, Eurotherm, and Wonderware into IOM. Strike number 2. Meanwhile, contradicting suggestions that this was a Wonderware coup, changes began to emerge there first. After lots of software development had already been shifted to IDC in India, credible reports came via Invensys weblogs that IDC was being sold to India-based CTS. Just a few days later, the layoffs started at Wonderware, reported by the weblogs as 1/3 of the development staff. The same weblogs reported that IDC was celebrating. The unrest is palpable. Changes in the air. How will the IOM combination of Foxborough, Wonderware, and Eurotherm affect the various distribution channels? Naively, Wolf and Sidepta have suggested that this would be an advantage. This tactic is naive in the extreme. In the real world of independent sales reps, sharing of customer information is anathema. The sales channels remain shell-shocked, waiting to see what dribbles down. Strike number 3 coming up. Wolf remains mum, perhaps just cleaning his desk. Item 2. Honeywell Rockwell Invensys. Weblog woes. I started JimPinto.com weblogs some years ago to facilitate open discussions of the affairs of major automation companies. There are weblogs for Honeywell, Rockwell, Invensys, Emerson, Siemens, ABB, and others. Today, these same weblogs generate several thousand visits per day to my website. It seems that during the recent recession, these weblogs have become a primary outlet for employees who are being terminated. Often, these people have no other way to communicate between groups, even between each other. Traffic on some of the weblogs has increased dramatically during recent lean times, especially from Rockwell, big layoffs in Canada and the UK, Invensys, big changes afoot, and Honeywell, gutting of the old culture and work transfers offshore. Actually, some of the weblogs are really quite good and explain the current management situation in several major companies. They are lucid and worth reading, providing valuable insights into how many large companies are falling apart. Well worth your time. Please review some of the recent blogs. Give me your opinion on what I can do to improve. I'll appreciate your comments and suggestions. Item 3. Decline of large companies. The old model, bigger is better, is starting to collapse. Huge vertically integrated conglomerates were created to minimize transaction costs, up and down the supply chain. Now distributed information networks do the same, more effectively, outside any single company. The web is globalization taken to the extreme. Projects can be open to the best of breed anywhere, creating virtual suppliers and workers that come together for one product and then reform for another. The large and disciplined organizations were powerful only when the game changed slowly. With today's accelerating change, they become vulnerable. They are becoming dead meat. The new economy, rising from the ashes of the latest meltdown, favors the small. Involuntary entrepreneurship is now creating tens of thousands of small businesses and a huge market of contract and freelance labor. Many will choose not to take full-time jobs again, even if they become available. The crisis may have turned our economy into small pieces, loosely joined, but it will be the collective action of millions of workers hungry for change that keeps it that way. So now, in the graveyard of giants, we're witnessing the final march of corporate dinosaurs into the tar pits. This is not just the trough of a cycle, but the end of an era. Item 4. Hire. When I was starting out in business, I remember asking Ken Olson, founder of DEC, for advice, the secrets of success. He smiled, never hire someone who is not better than you are. If you're always the best, when it comes to the crunch, you'll be doing the job. Ogilvy says in his book on advertising, which is really a management book, if each of us hires people who are smaller than we are, we'll become a company of dwarfs. But if each of us hires people who are bigger than we are, we'll become a company of giants. Former Apple marketing guru Guy Kawasaki says, A players hire A players, B players hire C players, meaning that mediocrity hires inferiority to feel superior. Large companies are driven toward mediocrity because they create management layers where mediocrity can hide. Middle managers in large companies hire to meet budgets and usually accept the lowest paid person who meets the qualifications. That's a primary cause of poor performance. Hearing hire takes self-confidence and self-awareness. It's the only way to build a great team. Small company entrepreneurs have every incentive to hire well, and they do, because good individual performance and teamwork makes them rich. Item 5. The future of reading. Perhaps the best invention of the past several hundred years is the book. It is a more reliable storage device, and a hard disk drive, and has a slick user interface, with no instruction manual needed, is instant on, and requires no batteries. Many people think it is so perfect an invention that it can't be improved upon. Publishers and authors generally refuse to put books online for fear the content will be copied and stolen. Every other form of media that's gone digital has been transformed by its audience. Books have a centuries-old tradition of annotation and commentary, with book clubs and margin notes. When books go online, readers begin commenting in blogs, sharing their favorite sections. Students buy used textbooks, studying the margins, because they want to acquire the best notes. If books were set free digitally, it would produce a class of readers so insightful that you'd pay extra to read their footnotes. The technology is here. There are web-based XML-like markup languages that allow for really terrific linking and mashups. The few authors who have experimented with giving away digital copies have found that they end up selling more print copies because their books are discovered by more people. Of course, books need not always be social links. One of the primary pleasures of a book is mental solitude, the deep, quiet focus on the author's thoughts and your own. That's not going away. But books have been held hostage offline for too long. Taking them digital will unlock their real hidden value. As usual, there are three feedbacks in this issue of E-News. Feedback 1. Roger Lavrinich has prognostications about the future of wars, writes Roger. Your comments on war reminded me of my grandfather, as we sat with our ears glued to the radio on Hitler's invasion of Poland. In 1939. I was 7 then. Poison gas was viewed as the WMD of World War I, and my grandfather couldn't believe the world would enter another war with such a killing technology widely available. I was also at his home 5 years later when the atomic bombs were dropped on Japan, ending World War II. Well, he said, with this massively destructive technology available, future wars will surely be out of the question for rational people. His conclusion, like yours I suspect, was founded more on hope and on human nature. Common rhetoric suggests substituting negotiation for war. War is the ultimate negotiation, a last-ditch effort to get the outcome desired. A willingness to risk all for an objective, ideology, prestige, territory, dynasty, or whatever drives you. Suicide bombers have goals that are worth killing and dying for. This is a very personal commitment, in fact the ultimate commitment. War is simply this type of commitment on a national scale. War is human-based, not government-based. The object of war is to put your enemy in sufficient misery that he will accept an outcome that no other means of negotiation can achieve. Upon Japan's surrender in World War II, Emperor Hirohito stated the situation precisely in a speech to his subjects. We must tolerate the intolerable. We must endure the unendurable. I'm paraphrasing in English, of course. Actually, avoiding war is easy, just surrender at every threat. Do you want an idea? Now you have one. Is it acceptable to you? See the problem? Welcome to the world of bias and warped perspectives. Remember, the bad guys view themselves as correct and righteous. Feedback 2. Tangela Kuhn Miller has some wonderful insights on globalization. Tangela writes, "It seems like we are making large steps to become a global world. I'm just wondering if globalization would work without cheap exploited labor in the equation. Would it work if companies in other countries had to comply with the same environmental laws and safety regulations? Would it work if they all had to comply with the same workplace rules and regulation, paying a fair wage and fair work week hours? I rather think it would not. Will globalization eventually run out of exploitable areas? If it comes face to face with an educated and united workforce that no longer tolerates abuse, will it take on a new name or meaning? If it is no longer profitable without exploitation, will it become more profitable to manufacture locally again? It seems like we need to go backwards to simpler times. All of the greatest drug discoveries must now be removed from our food, animals, plants, water, and air. To be safe, we must reduce use of microwaves and try eating more raw food. We are told to walk and ride bikes instead of sitting in autos and buses. Will the world start going back to simpler times? So much to learn." Feedback 3. Bob Zook comments on my survey question. Would you pay for receiving JimPinto.com e-news? Bob writes, "Jim, your question was interesting. Most large companies don't have easy ways to pay for subscriptions without days worth of paperwork. I would suspect that by the time you invoice us, we have 52 levels of management to review the invoice and ask for justification, reports, and have committee meetings, that the cost would be far in excess of anything you would be charging. Alas, many of your corporate readers would give up in despair and spend their remaining work years in a deep depression over not getting your newsletters. Well, that's this issue of e-news. Please send us your feedback. Tell Jim how you like me, his Jimbot text-to-speech robot. Send your email to jim@jimpinto.com. Thank you."